Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 371.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Fake the Nation. I am, of course, not Nagin Farsad. She is on assignment, and if you want to hear her this week, you can tune into Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, wherever all your favorite NPR things are listened to. I am Ben Ari Poulton, your lovable guest host for this episode, and I haven't assembled an all-star team because, you know, we owe it to you, the listeners, to really put together a top-notch show. So, first up, I'm going to try and live up to Nagin's outstanding intros. She is world-renowned for how she intros people. So let me just say, our first guest that I'm going to introduce, legendary comedian, co-creator of The Daily Show. She is an author. She is a phenomenal human being. And she is going to tell you about all her activism and everywhere that she tours around the country, because this is the legendary Liz Winstead!
Oh my God, that is a lot of buildup. That was impressive. I like the end to the crescendo.
You know?
Kind of went into like FM radio puker guy.
That's right. It's good. You know, it's a fine line between like podcasting and morning FM radio guy.
Yeah.
Like, hey!
I feel like, yeah.
Let's go to the weather. Hey. How's that traffic going? Prink, prink. And speaking of morning.
Speaking of puking.
No, this next guy will never make you puke, and I can almost guarantee that. This is another, this is basically a New York institution, another legendary comedian. Just, you've seen him on television. You've seen him touring around the country. You have listened to him on some of your favorite podcasts and on the radio. You can catch him live, and you should, because this is the legendary Christian Finnegan.
Thank you, Ben Ari. It just, FYI, it's quite likely you've done none of those things. You've not seen me on TV, nor have you seen me around the country. But I appreciate, first of all, I want to say I appreciate the intro. And I also appreciate that you're saying everything in a Nagin cadence. I don't know if you noticed the hello, hello. Like, you did the whole Farsad experience.
I try and be an ally. I'm just in a world of Barbies. I'm trying to be an Alan here, and just really, you know, I'm just a caretaker for her show and giving the audience. But I will say, I have seen you live in other places, and I have listened to you, and I have watched you. So maybe I'm just speaking for myself.
Hey.
Maybe I'm just speaking for myself.
So everyone on this podcast, Christian, has participated in all of the comedy stylings that are you.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
100%. 100%.
My condolences.
Just unofficial polling, 100%.
All right.
And
well,
that's going to get us into, and this is a, you know, very light topic we're going to start with. Topic number one, the Georgia indictments are here. They've been here for a little bit, and boy, it's the gift that just keeps on giving. This is a big week for the Georgia indictments. On Thursday, the Don himself, Donald J. Trump, will be turning himself in to Georgia authorities. This is his fourth indictment. That's fun. John Eastman has turned himself in, and there was a little bit of a back and forth because he was he had to interrupt his disbarment hearing to go to his indictment hearing.
Yeah.
So that's a fun little thing. You know, this is an interesting thing, and I think we can just get into it because, you know, some of the indictments start blending together. This particular Georgia indictment is a RICO case, and this is really about the overall conspiracy to interfere with a Democratic election and the slate of fake electors that were put together to illegally steal an election and subvert the democratic
Can
process.
Can you legally steal an election?
You know what?
I feel like we don't need to say illegally steal an election.
Funny you should say that, because I feel like I've been through a couple of legally stolen elections.
Yeah, I mean, that does 2014.
2004 come to mind. But this was just blatantly illegal.
Yeah, this was just illegally stolen.
And I think, you know, but that brings up a great point, because I think this is one of the reasons why Donald Trump is so mad, is he picked up the phone and did what Republicans used to do, which is just like, hey, can you find me a few votes? And they wouldn't do it for him, you know. Yeah. But beyond that, they really went all out. They didn't just do the little like, hey, we'll fight it in public opinion, get a bunch of people mad, and then, you know, campaign on it. No, they put together slates of fake electors in different states, had them sworn in, had them sign official documents, which is a felony. And also, you know, they had lawyers going to bat to try and coerce and strong arm, you know, elected officials into decertifying the legal results and then putting in their own certification. So, Liz, let's throw it to you. Why is this indictment different from all other indictments?
Well, I think that because, you know, this was a massive breach of Canva. You know, people were just designing documents on Canva, fake, just, you know, I'm like, this is not.
The craftsmanship
Craftsmanship. Yeah. I mean, I think that the subversion of election is, you know, it's this one and the federal charge, you know, they're treasonous, A, which is problematic for people. And B, I think what's unraveling in this is not only, you know, this started out, the information we had about Georgia was Trump's phone call over and over again, give me the 11,700, whatever it was, votes. And then as it's been revealed, you know, we've seen exactly how much Eastman played a role in this, how much Rudy Giuliani played a role in this, how much 17 other people who we've never heard of played a role in this. And I don't know if you saw Eastman yesterday, but they were like, do you think the election was stolen still? And he's like, absolutely. And so, I mean, I think what's good for the country is A, he finally put on pants, and B, the disbarment co-brand is fun. Just, you know, I'm in a, I'd like to come to the phone right now, but I'm in my disbarment trial and I'm in my indictment for overthrowing an election trial. I'll get back to you when I can.
Right. Christian?
Point of order. It was Jeffrey Clark who had no pants on.
Jeffrey Clark who had no pants on.
In case, the ombudsman jumps in and takes us to task.
Thank you. I forgot it was indeed Jeffrey Clark.
I mean, in case this podcast is admitted into evidence later, we want to make sure we cross all our T's, dot all our I's.
There is no disinformation or misinformation on this podcast. We correct errors in real time to give you all the facts as we know them.
I feel so bad. I'm sorry, John.
There's something about those two chumps that I get mixed up in my mind all the time, too. Because you just know that they're these two strivers, you know, these two guys who saw an opening and saw like a chance to hit the big time. I mean, I might be projecting a lot, but that's how it feels with both of those guys, that they were kind of, you know, established, semi-respectable dudes in their field. But it was a limited field, but they saw an option. And that to me is like Trump's big, I don't know if you want to call it superpower or fatal flaw or whatever, is that he inspires the venalness within the soul of every person he encounters. And every person sees him as a shortcut to greatness and power. If only they can just get rid of their gag reflex, they are able, like, they see him as like a fucking a water slide to importance, you know.
You know,
but John Eastman, though, like, that dude is just like, while he see, like, they keep saying that he was like, you know, he was at a white glove law firm. It's like, he clerked for Clarence Thomas.
Right.
Dude knows from payoffs and bribes and garbage. Like, he's just trafficking and going up the ladder of just throwing the nation under the bus.
Well, and I think that this is actually an interesting thing. You know, Christian, like you were saying, a lot of these guys seem to be in sort of shoot the moon mode.
I've used the term shoot the moon so many times, you know, with regards to this
whole
generation.
It's so unlikely. But if we win, we literally have an autocracy and a dictatorship where we're
and
the three guys in
charge.
Penny,
in for a pound at this point. Yeah. You know? So the John Eastman thing, it totally makes sense to me that he would say, oh, I absolutely think it was stolen. Because like, what is he going to say now? Yeah. There's nothing to be gained for him to recant that. And so you're in it. You've made your decision and you know, I understand it on some, you know, and I think with a lot of these, you know, the electors and the fake electors and all that, I think a lot of these people have spoken in bad faith for so long, they can't comprehend that anyone would be able to tell the difference or wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
That's
like,
right.
Like, I think to a lot of the rank and file, like, oh, you thought we were serious about this? Like, don't you realize this is a tactic? That's all this is? This is just literally a tactic?
I was going to say, I think I've actually talked to Benari about this a lot. And part of what I think has just destroyed America is that we have removed people's connection to process from their daily lives, right? And so, like, for example, like, people are impatient when you know, the affordable health care plan didn't work and right away and blah, 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 you know. And I think they don't understand the legal process and that things take a long time. So I think that part of they've just gotten away with things for so long is really that sometimes this shit takes a long time to actually bring people to justice. So they become lazy and think, I can get away with anything, so I'm going to keep criming. But like not understanding that people are following you the whole time. You assholes.
Yeah. Yeah, and eventually I think that their sloppiness and their brazenness is what's going to... It's not like these were secret phone calls. They did it on television. They did it to people's faces because they've been doing this for so long and there have been no repercussions that nothing really... You know, they were like, whatever, the worst case scenario is we just try it again in 4 years. You know, I'm sure a lot of that is what's going on. Because this is the playbook. And what's interesting about this particular one and why it's kind of funny that this is Georgia is the Georgia laws, not for good reasons, are actually very onerous once you're in the legal, like once you get caught up in being charged in Georgia, it's not great because one, this isn't federal, this is state. So this can't even be pardoned by another Republican president. They would need they would need Georgia to pardon them on the state level. But Georgia is one of the few states where the governor doesn't have the power to do that. There's a separate council created, and sure, it's appointed by a governor, et cetera, but there's more of a process because in Georgia, they want to keep people in jail. And they may make the process so long is they want to make sure that even if you go through that process, you're going to do jail time. This is not a friendly state for doing crime. And also... This is under RICO. For those out there who don't know what RICO is, it's the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. And it's from the 70s. It was initially used to get organized crime. This is how they went after the mafia. This is how they went after the mob. And then it was later used to go after corrupt officials and things like that. Because, of course, if you're a corrupt official, you're probably using the same mafia playbook and operating in multiple states. In Georgia, there's less of a threshold. The federal threshold for RICO is, I think, the crime actually had to have happened or something. But in Georgia, just the attempt is enough for RICO. So the threshold for proving the guilt is far lower in Georgia. It's much, it's you have a better shot of nailing people. And also, when you have a RICO case, this is, like the mob, how you get people to flip on the top guy. RICO is what you use when you want to go after the guy at the top. And I think that you're running out of guys just below Donald Trump to flip. I think John Eastman's basically like your last wall. And Rudy Giuliani, these are your like last guys before you just get to the Don. Do you think this is it? This is the one.
So I love that, like, that RICO... It's almost like the legal version of fan service. For so long, you've seen people like screaming, is this Rico? People talk about Rico for like the last 3 years. People talk about Rico, Rico, Rico. And it's kind of like when you're watching some stupid like Star Wars, third tier Star Wars show. And like, that's the character that the nerds all love. You know what I mean? Like that this is like,
it's so like an Easter egg for nerds.
Exactly. For the Muller She Wrote out there. It's a Christmas for resistance libs. Of which I'm sort of one, but
we all watch all the Star Wars specials. We get it.
Yeah, exactly. I follow a lot of those big, the sort of resistance liberal accounts. I follow them the same way that I watch the Star Wars shows, where it's like, all right, fine, sure. there's a sense of exhaustion about it. But anyway, it really does feel like, and sorry, I'm really finding all my nerd associations now. You know how like when you're playing like Grand Theft Auto or something like that, you need like the fast car, but you also need like the powerful car. Like you need the various things. It feels like we have one of every kind of lawsuit.
Liz, yeah. do you think that this is a case of there's so many crimes. They did so much crime in that no one expected them to be charged with all the crimes. But now that they've been charged with all the crimes, one of them's got to hit.
I mean, you got to hope. I'm going to hope. And I'm going to hope only because, we saw justice be done when Trump was challenging the election results. We saw the court saying nothing nefarious happened. You bloated yak. What is wrong with you?
Right.
It's super hard to be optimistic about anything, and I really want to be, but I just don't know. But just because when I hear, from the circuit courts, the federal courts, what their interpretation of what is constitutional and the bastardization of the 14th Amendment and what all of this means, I just don't even trust the interpretation of a court system that is looking at this. So I want to be hopeful, but also I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know what the moral foundation of humanity is anymore. So I'm Nancy Negative, but I want to believe, but I just am having a hard time.
I think it's important for, Democrats, anyone who's not a MAGA person who, what do you want to lump in the Never Trumpers or, the Never Trump Republicans, whatever. I think it's really important to not try to be too clever about this, try to finesse this, not to be like, well, this is the case we should be focusing on. And, let's forget about, Bragg, the New York case, whatever. It's like, these are laws. They've been broken. Follow it through. And just not try to finesse it and try to be too smart. And like Democrats have a habit of doing that, trying to get like lowercase p political about these things and strategic. Just don't, because nobody knows how the politics is actually going to play out. Nobody knows how it's going to happen. So you may as well just do the right thing. I've always have the policy that honesty is easier to remember. And sort of doing things directly is just easier than trying to take a guess how the general public is going to consume events.
Well, and also it just feels like I don't know that there is a point where anybody who is part of the MAGA cult cares what happened.
That's right.
So it's really about people who believe in a sense of justice and humanity and our Constitution, right? And so that's why, Christian, what you said is right. See it through. See what happens. And then I always want to know exactly where I stand. So I do want to hear bigots speak. I do want to hear white supremacists say things. I do want to hear all of it. Because if you don't know who you're fighting in a battle and what weapons they're bringing, how do you even enter it? It's like you said, Christian, Democrats constantly show up to, bring a PowerPoint presentation to a knife fight. And it's an unending.
Yeah. And I can even feel it in myself. Like sometimes, like when Fani Willis kind of like really that many defendants, like, oh, like, is that the smartest way? Blah, blah, blah. Stop it. Stop right. it. Just let the cases flow the way they're supposed to flow. There are smarter people than me in charge of this.
And let people do their jobs. People do their jobs because I think this isn't actually the biggest real takeaway here is the system is only as good as the people who administer the system itself. Like the people we place into power, the people we elect, these are the people that will be pulling the levers of justice and the gears of democracy and all that sort of stuff. If you put terrible people in charge of that, terrible things will happen and the gears will grind to a halt and things will fall apart because they're bad at it or they actively don't want to. And I think, Liz, your point of that the MAGA cult doesn't care, they want that. They actually are actively rooting now for the crimes, I think, we've seen. And when you see, and we can talk a little bit about the debate that's coming up, which we're recording before the debate happens, but Donald Trump is still the front runner for the Republican nomination. So I think if you're a Democrat out there and there's a takeaway here, it's do not vote for Republicans. Just do not vote for Republicans for the next couple of elections. And that will fix this. That will flush them out.
I agree. It's the only thing that will fix this.
It's the only thing that will fix it.
To, you know, lock the kid in the closet with the carton of cigarettes like that. Right. That image of like the kid who smokes and so the parent puts it, like, yeah, like they have to lose consistently so that the fence sitters, the ones who are willing to go along with Trumpism, who may not be dyed in the wool, you know, Lauren Boebert types, it's like that they will realize, oh, this is no longer a path to success for us. Like, we just can't win. That's with right. This guy. And with,
yeah,
this
we can't win. And also giving policies a long enough time to come to fruition so they see the betterment of their lives because of the policies that the Republican Party constantly voted down, or everything was just, you know, if that's the way it's going to be.
I'm not sure anybody also, ever will, though. I think by the time it takes effect, they'll blame it on other things, or they'll be on to complaining about the next thing coming down the pike. I really believe that people think of the federal government as essentially useless to their lives. They think of it as almost like a national totem, as like a sign of image they want to project to the world. But I think they think of governors and state governments as actually being accountable for their lives. That's why I think sometimes you'll see those Democratic governors, they'll break through in red states and things like that, because those people actually have to get shit done. But when it comes to president, I think people just want, like, what is the face that I want representing America? And that's why I don't think they give a shit who, like, they don't care whether Trump is going to be effective. They don't care about his plans. They just want, they want the banner. They want America to be the face of Donald Trump and vice versa.
But I would also say, too, that in just being on the ground and doing the abortion work that I'm doing, watching these ballot initiatives overwhelmingly pass, but also watching these same people reelect over and over the people who are proposing these laws says to me that people don't have a connection. There's a massive disconnect about who is doing what and what they believe in. And so that confluence is a really hard thing. When I look at Kansas and I look at Ohio and I look at Missouri, and I look at where these ballot initiatives are taking hold, it's astounding to me that the legislators, governors on those statewide races, overwhelmingly the people still vote for them back into office.
Well, we're gonna wrap it up there, but you know, make politics local again, I think is really the big takeaway here, is get involved, know who the people on the ground making the decisions are, and be active in your community for the things that you care about. But put good people, just if you have the opportunity, put good people in power. Just try it. Let's try that for a little
bit. Proactive politicians. That's fun.
Yeah. And people who believe in, you know, democracy would be nice. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with topic number two.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef prepared meals that arrive to your door. And then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand up gigs, it's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back with topic number two. An Indiana abortion ban has just taken effect after the state Supreme Court denied a rehearing. I think this was the first ban that was put in place right after the Dobbs decision. And it's taken a while to work itself through the courts at Indiana. But now they said, yep, go ahead. And this is a real harbinger of doom for pro-choice activists, but also just women in healthcare everywhere across the country, not just the state of Indiana. Liz, you're in the trenches. Let's hear a little bit about what you've been doing and what this means in Indiana, but also for the country as a whole.
Indiana was one of the last holdout states in the Midwest. You know, it was very helpful. It's now become the 13th, I think, state with a total abortion ban. For what that means for people is it means around 34 million people of reproductive age are living in a state without abortion care access to them. States are deciding for all of us. Mississippi decided for all of us that Roe v. Wade would be overturned, that case, right? And so I think what's happening on two fronts is these abortion bans are wildly unpopular. So when you look at now as they're proposing them in states like Nebraska and states like Arkansas, and when the states have said this abortion ban is unpopular, they've tacked on trans care bills to them to get them through. So now they're using trans healthcare bans as a cudgel to get all of it through, which is really depressing. And we just had the Indiana is a big story, but the biggest story that happened last week is the fact that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled to roll back the abortion pill to 2000 levels, which is 7 weeks, and you have to have an in-person visit. Abortion medication is 53% of all abortions in our country. It's going to go back to the Supreme Court so they can actually oversee what the Fifth Circuit said and whether the plaintiffs have standing in this case. But that is a ruling that's very scary because that means that there's no safe haven states, really, for abortion. If there's a federal ban on mifepristone, that means that if New York wants to dispense it, they have to dispense it within those federal rules. And so however the Supreme Court rules, the one thing the FDA has in their pocket is the ability to say drugs that have not been approved in this way, that off-market use, it's called, they can dispense it for off-market use if people want to. And then the FDA can go through the rigorous process of expanding access all over again. It's a mess.
Christian, you know, a lot of times this comes up as, oh, but this is a women's issue, or this is, you know, this is about, you know, women's healthcare, and I'm a dude, either I don't have an opinion or I'll just, you know, let it play out. And, you know, what is your thinking on this? Is there a way that you see that dudes can be better allies or more active in it, as opposed to just the dudes who are taking the rights away from people?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it's ironic you're bringing this up, considering that you felt the need to go to Liz first just because she's a woman with 2+ decades of abortion activism. Like, you know,
come on,
whatever. I mean, yeah, it is, you know, it's easy. This is one of those topics where, I mean, I've certainly talked to dudes who are just kind of like, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. It's like, you know, it's none of my business. You know, it's like, no, it's now, you may have gotten away with that 10 years ago, but it's now everybody's business. And if you think that abortion is just about abortion, I've got some news for you. It is probably the biggest tool. You know, getting rid of abortion is probably the biggest tool of sort of returning culture back to some 1950s nonsense, which never existed in the first place. But I mean, being on the sidelines about it is really not an option anymore. And I don't want to treat abortion as just like, oh, man, this is a great issue for Democrats, you know, because while that may be true, you know, it is horrible, and it's a tragedy. And I mean, when you were talking about shooting the moon earlier, I mean, this is the example that I always think about, is that like they're in for a penny, in for a pound with this, and they will not stop. They will not stop. Like, people think like, oh, you know, Kansas defeated, you know, the Ohio defeated the ballot measure, we win. It's like, no, they're in. They're all in the anti-abortion, you know, fascists, you know, which is, feel like the teeth has been taken out of that word at this point. But the anti-abortion fascists who are in this fight, they're in it. They understand that this is their window. And I think that they're trying to do with reproductive health care what I think Democrats were hoping would do with the Affordable Care Act, in the sense that they want to make it the standard state of play so that people don't question it anymore. Like, I think that was one of the I'm sorry, I'm being a little not being particularly acute here with my words, but a lot of the Republicans were saying, like, if we let Obamacare get through, people will start to expect it and you'll never be able to roll it back again. And I think that conservatives are trying to do that same thing in reverse. I think they're wrong. I don't think it functions the same way, because young people will change it. But I think that their thinking is, this is our window to really lock it in that abortion is illegal, and then people will just come to accept that that is the natural state of things, and this will be the state of play for the next 30 years. I think they're wrong, but that's
it's
the
funny that you bring up the politics of it, though, because in Iowa already they've done polling, and Republicans seem to be split on the issue. And I'll just speak anecdotally, because I know some Republicans who talk to me, again, unscientific, but every one of them, now they don't disagree with the abortion ban. Let's be clear about that. They support, you know, the anti-abortion sort of philosophy and those policies. What they seem to be upset about is how it's affecting them politically. To a person, every Republican that talks about this talks about the overreach that the Supreme Court has really screwed them, because it's bringing out Democratic voters and it's keeping their voters at home because it's unpopular.
Yeah.
And another word for unpopular.
How dare they give up the game? Yeah.
and unpopular in, I don't know, a democracy seems to be not a winning strategy when you're trying to ram through policies that nobody likes. So it's just interesting to me that a lot of the Republican view of it is like, hey, we were doing a great job when it was technically legal, but we could sort of come up with the gamesmanship on the state level or locally get rid of it and fight it that way. But now you brought it out for all the world to see and we look like assholes and nobody likes that.
But now I just want to be really clear on a couple things. And that is, Christian, what you said is exactly correct. And I just want to yes and it a little bit, where the anti-abortion movement has organized around this issue since the day after Roe v. Wade in 1973. And Democrats have a gigantic role in why we are here. I cannot tell you how many times I have been told to be quiet. It's a wedge issue. People don't know. So when you talk about Republicans being like looking at the horse race, that's the only way that Democrats have talked about it either. They don't talk to people who've had abortions. Mm. They don't create proactive legislation that would actually expand access to the care. They have been, the reason that we're here is because nobody in politics changed anything. Providers and activists and people who've had abortions have been forced to come forward and tell their story. And we've talked about and used the right wing's language for so long, our side, that we don't even know how to talk about it as a community good, as a moral good, as things that people have to make life better. You know, and so it's like working on two fronts of these people are assholes who commit these bans, but where our side has been actively telling people who are working in the movement to be quiet and shut up about it.
Well, and it's, you know, you mentioned that, and all of a sudden there are these stories that come out as soon as these bans went into effect, or people, doctors got scared because they're in states where now there's these onerous laws and lawsuits. All of a sudden, just you know, families, women who got pregnant, who went in for a procedure, can't get a life-saving procedure because it might be misconstrued as an abortion, or maybe they need the abortion. But there's all these ripple effects that they say are, oh, but these were unintended consequences, but they're not unintended consequences. These were always the consequences of the anti-abortion movement. It starts with that because that was a, as you said, people were afraid to talk about it politically.
Right. Well, and there's the two, in sort of the work we've done in the broadest of strokes, there's sort of these two different camps of anti-abortion people, right? There's the fat cats who would pay for an abortion for their mistress, who use abortion as a way to raise money, stay on the platform, would vote for the bills, but would never read the bills. And so the dog caught that car, and they are like, oh, people are dying. I guess I didn't realize that. But we discount the second group that have as much power, have as much skin in the game in state legislatures. And those are the people who are the true believers who think that if you have an abortion, you should get the death penalty. I sat in Georgia 2 weeks ago on the steps of the Capitol and watched 500 activists come onto the Capitol with state legislators begging for a bill. And there's 18 states that have some sort of bill, whether it's in committee or gone through, that say abortion is murder in all cases. And anybody who has an abortion, anybody who aids somebody who has an abortion, performs one, should be prosecuted to the highest extent. And those people are no joke. And they are really dominating the conversation. And because of gerrymandering, dominating getting those bills written, and are funded up the waz by, you know, the ALEC version of the anti-abortion movement, Americans United for Life, and these other organizations. And it's terrifying. Don't write them off as crackpots, because they are not. In fact, understand that anti-abortion corporatists don't even understand how horrible these people are.
Well, let me wrap this up on.
So sorry, I know that was like a whole lot of words. Well, no, but I think it's important.
You're right. I mean, it does sort of take your breath away slightly when you realize the force of hatred that you're really up against with some of these people. You know,
And the long-term commitment, as you said, this was a day one thing. You know, people, you know, we might remember the, you know, Bork, you know, people got Borked, you know, and they always do that. And when Kavanaugh was confirmed, they brought Bork out because he was the face of what the Democrats had prevented, you know, them from getting on the Supreme Court. And people forget that it wasn't his role in Watergate and his role in the Nixon administration, the criminality there. It was his stance, his staunch anti-abortion stance, which was unpopular. And somehow
he wasn't even a rapist.
he was just a normal anti-abortion judge. But people forget how long they've held on to that. That didn't go away for them. And there is that element of they've been, it's a long-term strategy. But I know that you, Liz, are doing something about that. So I want to wrap this up on a positive note and a call to action. Tell us about your organization. Tell us about what you're doing and how we can also get involved. Because I find it actually very empowering at a time when it feels like, but how do we stop all these things from happening?
I know. You're doing something about it. It feels like there's a lot. It feels like it's a lot. And I also just want to say, too, to men, I feel like we did a disservice. I mean, I think when the movement started, women were just saying to men, like, please don't say anything, because we just really need you to not say anything. And I think as we've evolved, we can't fight this on our own. And like I say to every dude, like, if you're not married to the first person you had sex with and, you know, you're thriving and you have kids with somebody you love, it's probably because of abortion and birth control. So like that's you got skin in the game, right? For your own destiny and for your own stuff, right? But what we do about it is a couple of things. I have an organization called Abortion Access Front. We have a bunch of programmatic work. I would say if you're like freaking out and like, I don't know what to do, please don't tell me to march again without any plans.
Right.
We have a great program called Operation Save Abortion. It's a 5-part series that we recorded that comes with a toolkit. So you can watch a 45-minute video of the most amazing people doing all different kinds of work in the abortion movement. You'll learn about reproductive justice. You'll learn how you could be an activist with helping out independent clinics, abortion funding, direct action, and legislative and policy work. So I highly suggest get together with some friends. Take 2 months. Watch each one of those five in the series, do the workbook with your friends, and it gives you an overview of what's out there, of how you can be helpful, and then helps you identify where you might fit in. And then you sign up to volunteer and we'll hook you up. We have to vet you. So there's a little form you fill out and we'll vet you. And then we'll hook you up locally of where you live. And then there's all sorts of national things you can do too. On OperationSaveAbortion.com, there's also an activist calendar that's chock full of events. And you can look in your area and see what's happening. So I'm just going to give you that because there's a lot. But if you go to AAfront.org, there is a ton of stuff to do on top of that as well.
All right, Fake the Nation. You heard her. Get on it. And topic number 3.
Don't you want to hear about my organization?
I do.
Christian, what are you doing?
It's basically just a few of us. We hang out at a Chipotle once a week, and we just say, like, what have you guys been watching lately? And we just talk about TV shows we've been watching, and you can
A lot of suits talk.
You can find us at x.com.
That seems amazing. I feel like, you know what, Christian? Thank you.
Hey, it's anything to be an ally.
Thank you. I mean, I'm just like overwhelmed with gratitude.
Topic number 3. We read an article in the Times about the oversharing problem with Venmo. We might be oversharing. Those of us who have used any sort of social media or any apps on our phones probably weren't too surprised that our privacy is being violated here, but a lot of people don't set their Venmos to private. So all their transactions are public, but other information that they, you know, probably weren't thinking about, like who they talk to, their contact lists, all the things in their phones, you know, they give these apps access to it and people can publicly search it. So Christian, do you use Venmo, and are you surprised by this invasion of privacy?
I only pay for things with the stores of gold I have bought off purchase from WeBuyGold.com. I do use Venmo, and I have not bothered to set mine to private. I don't care. I mean, I know I'm not underestimating everything you say. I understand that that is what's going on, but I don't use Venmo hardly ever except to just get payment for sets, or, you know, if I'm repaying somebody because we went to a movie and they
bought
the ticket.
Sets with a T, by the way. This isn't a Matt Gaetz situation.
Yeah, no, no. And nothing wrong with that. Well, him, but okay, I'm getting weird area.
No, there are things wrong with
him. Yes, there's wrong. Yes, yes.
I would like to correct the, if for the ombudsman on this show, I do would like to say.
I'm just saying, for the pro sex working. Anyway, moving on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just the underwear. Okay, this has gotten to a weird thing. Let us pray. Anywho, I do like playing that silly little game of if I do have to send a friend of mine like $10 to repay him for a movie ticket or something. $10, what is this, 1994? $400 to repay for a movie ticket. I do like sending the joke memo, you know, that, you know, just putting like erotic back rub or something like that in the, you know, just in the case that anybody's scrolling. But that's a joke for nobody except for me. You know, like you'll send somebody $20 and you'll write tickle fight in the memo.
Liz, do you ever scroll through your friend's Venmo history to see what they've been paying for?
I'm so busy. That is the fucking, I don't even, who has that kind of time? Like, honestly, if you've scrolled all of your, if you're literally the saddest person in the world who's like, I've looked at everything. I've scrolled Spoutable. I've scrolled Blue Sky, everything.
We're at the end.
And now I'm going to scroll somebody's Venmo. Just, are you counting the slices of pizza? No, my Venmo's been private since the beginning. I don't want people to know my, also, it's only because my bank account's attached to it is the only, is like why that is why I don't have it public.
Right.
Because I'm like, I don't know if something were to happen and I don't know, could people just whatever access it, but probably they could anyway. I'm sure. Whatever.
Have we gotten, I mean,
didn't Clarence Thomas use Venmo?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's how he bought, that's how one of his friends, yeah, I think Harlan Crowe Venmo'd him a yacht. And a camper.
He didn't even, yeah. But in the memo, he just had a picture of a boat. It
was just, yeah, an just emoji, a picture of a boat emoji. And then whatever the Walmart icon was. The
you know, Harlan Crowe's yacht is called the SSSS. That is my joke about Harlan Crowe's yacht.
Oh, it's thank funny because much. He's a Nazi.
Yeah.
So,
or at least an enthusiast.
Well, but this actually brings up the point of, like, does it matter that people can see the history of things? Because I feel like our privacy data has become sort of white noise. We've become used to everybody just knows everything. I've signed away my rights. I've signed away my privacy. We live in an online society where to get simple transactions done, just if you want to pay bills now, you got to sign up online and give away all your stuff. We walk around with a privacy invasion in our phones.
I do think there's a hiding in plain sight aspect to it. Yeah. That it's just like there's so much info. It's like if you're able to isolate the, you know, one transaction I made, you know, that I got paid for a Thursday night set at Eastville Comedy Club in 2022, God bless you. You know,
I feel like it's more for just like mentally ill, petty people who are looking to see who is eating without them. Is their boyfriend
exes? Goodbye?
What, yeah, does this mean? What is my ex doing? Where are they splitting up thing? Like, I feel like that's what someone scrolling through Venmo has some deep, either like needs help on some level.
Yeah, I wonder if that the whole, I always wondered why is the public thing even an option? Like, what is the purpose of it? And I think it may be performative. Mm. I think it's so that people can show people, look at what I am spending money on, or look, right, at who's paying me. It's right, same. It's like poetry. Everybody writing it, nobody reading it.
That feels really sad.
But you know, you
feels
you,
really sad. I mean, that's where we're trying at. To get social capital.
That's just where we're
by
at.
Their pizza splitting.
I mean, that's the way the rest of the world works. I'm not sure why Venmo would be excluded.
Hey, that makes monetary sense. Christian, I'm with you on that.
Monetary Instagram of life.
Yeah.
He's like, look who I had pizza with. But this brings up another article that we actually read in self.com about canceling plans with friends. And Liz, you just, you know, you mentioned, like, you know, you're going through and you see who's doing what with whom. And sometimes, you know, I'm sure we've all had that moment of like, oh, they said that they weren't around tonight. And but here you are clinking drinks, or you just went and saw, you know, you did a Barbenheimer day without me. Have you run into that? And then on the flip side, have you had to cancel plans with friends and found a way that it is socially acceptable to let them down easy?
You mean like and not post on the internet?
And not
about
post
it?
On the internet about it.
I mean, sometimes I just don't post on the like I often, and you know me well enough to know this is fairly true. I usually enjoy my friends. Like, I forget to take photos of a night out, or I like to be in the moment.
Right.
So I'm not somebody who posts my whole life every time I'm having dinner with a friend, or let's make sure we get a selfie. Like, I often forget that. But I have had friends who I know would be, why didn't you invite me to that concert? And if I went with somebody else or whatever, that I just chose to not do anything about it online because I knew that there would just be blowback about that stuff. But I also don't cancel plans. I just don't make them.
Best way to cancel plans is not to make them.
No.
I found that, like, you know, I just turned 50, and I think when you get to a certain age, you've never been lonelier and in more need of interaction with friends and never less likely to actually follow through on it. It's like a weird combination where it's like, I really miss seeing people, but no, that's okay.
But the work involved to do that is too much.
It's just no.
Well, I have to tell you, I just, a couple years ago, I bought a house in Minnesota with two of my best friends from here. It was a childhood family home of a friend of mine's that went up for sale. And we've known each other for a really long time. And their children are out of the house. You know, we're all adults. And it's been very helpful for just like hanging out, having people over. And it's kind of a new way of thinking about that very thing, Christian, of like, who am I? What am I doing? We remind ourselves all the time of people, or if they're inspired to invite some people over, then I'm like, have the added bonus of, we share the same friends. So it's like, oh, great. Now I didn't have to plan that thing.
That's great.
And then same with me. So it's been a really great way to combat the loneliness in a way that I hadn't expected, but it's really welcome.
Yeah. It's like roommate. It's like your roommate years, except without any of the crap that you associate with that phase
with
of your life.
With grown adults, everyone has enough money to pay for the food.
Yeah.
Like, no, everybody's got their space in the house. Nobody wants to live in garbage. People drink good booze. Like, there's things that are happening that really make sense. And and also, it's like really
the casual
nice
hanging
space.
Out that happens in those situations where it's just like, hey, let's go grab a slice or whatever, you know, or like, you know, what are you doing? Like, as opposed to like texting somebody 15 times. And I actually think that texting culture has contributed to people bailing on plans because planning things seems so fucking labor intensive now. And there's just the back and the forth. And like, you know, instead of the 30-second phone call where we could hash all this out, there's everybody staring at their phones 10 times and it just gets exhausting.
I 1,000% agree. I think there is a texting tipping point where there is like you can chart like the exact text when the plan will get broken. Like there's like a certain number of texts and like you hit like that's it. This thing is not happening.
It usually starts with, so are we still doing this?
Yeah. Like, or something. Yeah. It's like, wait, did you want me to bring the like, yeah, no, yeah. I don't know. We're out. Guys, this has been a real treat, and the time has flown by, and this brings us to the end of this
we're done.
Episode.
This is so great to talk with both of you.
We have faked the nation.
We have
faked the nation has been faked.
We have faked the fuck out of this nation, guys.
I am AI. That's how fake this is.
So fake. Liz, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on all the socials at Liz Winstead. I spell my name with two Z's. You can find Abortion Access Front at Abortion Front, but the offices are closed until after Labor Day for a much needed rest. But go there for all your activism, all your abortion news. And I have a podcast called Feminist Buzzkills that drops every Friday. It is all you need to know about what's happening in the world of reproductive health rights and justice with the most amazing providers and activists and legal scholars out there. telling you stories with a lot of snark and plenty of funny.
And Christian, I know you're on X talking about shows with your friends. Where can they find you there, and where are you going to be?
And at Chipotle, the Chipotle on 31st Street in Astoria, right off the Ditmar stop. You can meet me there. You can find me. I'm all the socials. I'm at Christ Finnegan, and I have 5 albums on iTunes. And my latest special, Show Your Work, is streaming on Amazon Prime, a Prime Video rather. And if you are, I write a newsletter called New Music for Olds, which is basically where I recommend new music to people who are too tired and past trying to find it themselves.
Oh my God, I'm on that. I did not know that. And now I know that. And I'm so excited.
Newmusicforolds.substack.com.
My Gen X just like increased triple fold.
I've been doing it for about a year and a half now. It's I'm actually slightly on a hiatus until Labor Day, but I may squeak one in anyway. But yeah, newmusicforolds.substack.com.
Fantastic. I'm on the socials at Ben Ari Lee, Instagram, the whatever X is. I guess I'm on Blue Sky now. Spoutable, the whole whatever. I sign up for more social media as I post less and less because, you know.
Yeah, the returns are past diminishing at this point.
Yeah, but you know what? That's how we connect with one another. So find everyone. Hope you've enjoyed this show. Nagin will be back, of course, next week. Don't forget to tune in to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me to hear her guest hosting this week. And there you can get, I'm sure they'll have a lot to say about the upcoming Republican debate this week. I want to make sure that I thank Gabby Alter for the theme music, our show's producer, the incredible Andrew McGuire. I want to thank all the folks at HeadGum for helping to make this show possible. And again, Nagin, we'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.